Blog Talk Radio.
On the Shelly Nunchuck Show with my little furball co-host, Jackie Chan Kitty, up in here, Maine. I'm a Boston girl, born through and through, and I'm very, very excited. When am I not excited? I'm following my bliss, and I have my radio show. I'm so excited, and I feel very blessed and very honored to be able to get a lot of guests for my show. And I'm thankful, my listeners, wherever you're listening from, I know my friends over in the United Kingdom, China, Hollywood, everywhere, you know, my peeps back home in Boston. Thank you, everyone, for listening to my show. And I do have a special guest. And as I'm very lucky, I all get to share. It's kind of like my childhood. I'm reliving again. Because, you know, I always say, I never ever wanted to be Barbie. I've always wanted to be a ninja. And it seems like I'm getting more and more of my ninja peeps that I've watched growing up on TV. So it's like I get to share some of my childhood things that I've actually watched growing up. My special guest tonight, and I do apologize, like I said, I have the Bostonian accent, I butcher everybody's name, is Keith Vitale. And just a little tiny bit, just to read this off his IMDb page, he started his martial arts career at the University of South Carolina in 1971, and in only 2 years earned his first degree black belt, competed in regional tournaments, and major events throughout the world. was world karate champion and U.S. national karate champion for three consecutive years, 1978 to 1980. Began his film career in Force 5, then Revenge of the Ninja. Keith co-starred with none other than Jackie Chan, woo-hoo! And Meals on Wheels, and starred in No Retreat, No Surrender 3, American Kickboxer, and Super Fights. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to bring, I'm hoping this is my special guest in the queue, who's been waiting very patiently. Hold on. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Shelley, it's Keith Vitale.
Hi, thank you, welcome to my show.
My pleasure. Love being here.
I'm so super excited. So how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. You know, I knew you had an accent, but I didn't know where it came from. But now, it's a Bostonian accent. That's what it is.
Yes. And it's something that sticks and stands out, so I've kept it. I've decided to just keep it, and it just works with me. You know what I mean?
Well, let me ask you a question to start off the night. I'm sure you've explained this many times. But I'm not familiar, but how'd you come about your name? I understand the Shelley, but your Carmen Nunchuck, how did that come about?
Well, the funny thing is, I came up with this stage name, Shelley Nunchucks, right? Because not the fact that I like nunchucks, not saying I'm pro or anything, but when I first got into acting, and I wanted something that was kind of short, not too long, and something maybe to do with action, martial arts that people could remember, and something that nobody
uh-huh.
else had. So everybody's like saying, because I'm part Italian, and they're like, oh, you need like an Italian last name like Zinaboni or something. I'm like, isn't there an ice cleaning machine in the hockey rink or something? I'm like, what? And then I'm like, no, I want something like a certain name. Says, so I'm holding my nunchucks, and I'm going, nunchucks? I want to do Shell Nunchucks, and I go, that sounds stupid. That sounds, everybody was saying that. But after a while, it just stuck. And so they're like, no one else on the IMDb page or anywhere in the whole entire actors universe has Shelley Nunchucks as a name. So people remember it. And I'm like, okay. So then I got the idea with Karma because I wanted to come up with this comic book character. And I was doing a martial arts photo shoot. And I'm like doing like cosplay, but before it's called cosplay, where you dress up as characters and go to these conventions. We didn't have
sure.
a name for it. You just went and you dressed up. And I mean, it's all like, it's totally different now. I mean, the costumes are crazy and stuff. But I wanted to create my own character because they overdo Wonder Woman and all these other characters. And says, you know what? I want to start coming up with my own character's name. And the word comma, you know, it comes back and bites you in the butt. So the character that I came up with, yeah. So that's what I was like, you know, well, if there's no one else to call Karma, and she's going to come back and do revenge for you and stuff. So that became how I came up with the Karma and put it in there. And who knows if it's going to stick like that, but that's how I got the name, basically.
Oh, no, it's wonderful. No, it makes sense now, especially, you know, for a stage name. You know, I'm Italian also with a last name Vitale. I'm from a big Italian family. And there's four boys, four girls, and each of us have Italian names except for me. And I was the only child that my mother named, and she named me Keith. And, you know, the irony about that is my entire life I've never liked my name Keith. I have brothers Ricardo and Joseph and, I mean, all these names and Stefano and Maria. And guess what? I'm the only one named Keith. I lived in Italy for 4 years. The Italians could not pronounce the TH. So they go, Kita, Kita, Kita. So it was a terrible name to have my whole life. And I remember when I was a competitor, I was in another country someplace competing, and this guy introduced himself to me, and his name was Keith. And I said, oh, that's great. I said, I'm not too happy about my name. And he goes, why not? And I said, well, I've never really liked the Keith. And he goes, you know what Keith means, don't you? And I went, no. He says, it's a Gaelic word that means warrior, a fighter. And I went, get out of town. How about that? I mean, that's pretty sharp. You know, fortuitous that my mom would come up with a name, the only non-Italian name for me, for one of the children. And I actually became a fighter myself. So I thought that was always pretty cool.
That's really awesome. I did not know that. I did not know that. It just suits you. So, like, how did you, you know, when you were little, right, as a little kid, did you always want to get into martial arts? I mean, how did you, can you tell us, people probably know who you are, but for those that don't, my listeners that listen in, How did you get into martial arts?
Well, I tell you, I've lived a very blessed life. I've come up at the right time. I've acted at the right time. I competed at the right time. It's just one of these odd things in life where, you know, I was right for the right time. Right now, if I competed, I'd be doing MMA and have tattoos and fighting on the ground, and it'd be a whole different world. But I came up in a more respectful world of the old martial arts back in the 70s and the 80s, and it was a different era. When I first started, I had never heard of the word karate. So I then grew up as a child, you know, dreaming of being a martial artist because I had never seen martial arts before. And I remembered I had a track scholarship my first year. I started school because I went to Italy, and I started school at 5 years old. So I graduated so early. When I came back from Italy, came to the United States, I was only 15 years old when I started college, and I was on a track scholarship. I was a distance runner. And when you think about it, how wonderful for a background for distance running for me to transcend and go into martial arts, because I had great cardiovascular for fighting. But I remember my first year after college, I was running at a university in Charleston, South Carolina. And I didn't care for running. I didn't like running. I was just genetically good at running. I could always run, and I was just fast. Well, anyway, at the end of the first year, I was home for a break, summer break, and one of my high school buddies, John Bellinger, has started taking something called karate. He comes to my house, and he says, I want you to come meet my karate instructor, John Roper, and he's from Korea, and he's teaching this martial arts class. And I remember saying these words, well, what do you mean, karate, martial arts, what is that? And John said, now, this is my high school buddy. He goes, why don't you hold your hand up out like you're going to punch me? So I just held my arm out. And he sidekicked me and round kicked me and threw me on the ground. And I went, oh, my goodness, this hurts like crap. Whatever this guy's doing, he went from being just mild manner in high school to just a killer. So I said, sure, take me to your leader. Take me to your instructor. Now, get this. This would tell you about how obsessed I am and what kind of personality I have about sports. So I went to meet his karate instructor at the University of South Carolina. So we went that night, and I walked in, and I saw guys sparring for the first time. I didn't know what sparring was, but gear hadn't been invented yet. This is 1971, so gear hasn't even been invented. And they're sparring and kicking, and I'm like going, oh, this is wonderful. The instructor walks over to me, and we talked about 5 or 10 minutes, and he punched me in the chest and showed me how karate works. And I'm sitting there, and he says, listen, if you want to take karate, he said, I'd love to teach you. I went home from that one class, picked up the phone, called my track coach up in Charleston, South Carolina, told him I wasn't coming back. I dropped my track scholarship. I went the next day to admissions. I enrolled in the University of South Carolina. I got accepted, and I started, as soon as I got into college, taking karate as a short course at USC. One meeting with my instructor changed my life.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and so now I'm in martial arts, and gear hasn't been invented yet, and I started competing. And get this, at this time, the Chuck Norris's and the Joe Louis's, and for the new listeners out there, these were just the marquee names. And these were when these guys were making a name for themselves, and I was a young man, and I'm still young, and I'm in college. And I started traveling, and I started training with as many people as I could train. And I went into my college, and I said, listen, you have all these club activities. And I went, in South Carolina at that time in the 70s wasn't known for sports. And I went, and I spoke to the administration, and I said, I'd like to propose. And they said, sure, what would you like to propose? And I said, you know, your teams, your marquee teams in baseball, football, basketball, they're really not doing well. I said, if you give me the funding to put a team together, I will put a team together and put the University of South Carolina on my back, and I'll compete on a national level. And they went, you're pretty cocky. And I said, no, I promise you, I think we can do well. And I had everything laid out, how many tournaments, where I wanted to go. You know, I'm a young guy, I just want to go play and have fun, and but I still wanted to work out. Well, they came back and they said, sure, we'll fund you. So they funded all of my travel. And so I put a small team together, and our team would travel and we'd go compete. You know, in spite of us, you know, we were just trying to have a good time. When you traveled and trained with the very best in the world at the time, you got better. I mean, it's just by osmosis. You train with Bill Wallace, you get good. You know, you actually excel. And so what a wonderful time in life for me to be in college. I have one of the first collegiate karate teams in the nation I started. I became the president of the karate club. I wrote my own book, and the students had to read it and had to buy it for the curriculum. I got credit for teaching while I was there. I was a history major, and the university paid for my travels, and I started competing around the country. So how fortunate was that? And then we moved into the era, and this would move me transcend into the film world. It's just the right time because what wonderful names, Chuck Norris and Joe Louis and Jeff Smith and all these phenomenal, just phenomenal, great people. And when I started competing, right after these great guys started doing full contact, a new, I guess, ratings came up, and there was a couple magazines only at the time. I just think there was two national magazines. And the ratings came out, and the first ratings, I was top 10 alphabetically. And so my last name is Vitali, so I was number 10. My good friend Dan Anderson was number one. Now, nobody reads alphabetically. People just assume the first year the ratings came out, I was number 10 in the country. And that upset me so much. Most people would be, you know, honored and, oh, my gosh, you're top 10 in the nation out of a million fighters and or a million martial artists. And I went, well, that's great. I said, I don't mind. But I'm so competitive, I like to see the other nine top 10 guys beat me first, and then I don't mind being top 10. So I started traveling and looking for the other top 10 fighters. And I would train and travel, and I was just obsessed. And before long, the next year when the ratings came out, I was rated number one. Now, get this, when I was number one in the country, I kept it for 3 years, number one, all weight classes, and I'm only 150 pounds, right at 6 foot tall. But I appeared on so many magazine covers, 13 in 1 year alone, martial arts movie, martial arts magazine covers. Because I was on so many of them that I received a phone call from Hollywood for me being on one or two of them. And I love this story. I remember I was teaching martial arts. I was working for a guy named Joe Corley in Atlanta at the time. And as I'm teaching, my now wife was my assistant at the time, Kathy, who's my wife. But she was just a young girl, and she comes and gets me out of class, and she says, you have a phone call. So I go, yeah, that's great. I go answer the phone, and the person on the phone is a lady. She says, my name is Priscilla McDonald. I'm from Canon Films in Los Angeles. We'd love to fly you to California. We'd love to offer you a three-movie deal. And I went, wonderful. And also, can you tell Mike Genova to kiss my ass? And I hung up the phone. My best friend's Mike Genova, and he pulls pranks like this all the time. So I hung up the phone.
No!
I go back out. I'm teaching class. The phone rings again, and Kathy comes back, and she says, I think you might want to get this phone. And I go back, and I get the phone, and I went, listen, will you tell Mike to quit doing this? And she goes, I have no idea who this Mike guy is. My name is Priscilla McDonald from Canon Films. If you would just quit hanging up on me, we'd love to offer you a three-movie deal. I went, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, my God.
And that's how I broke into films, just like that. And it was really great because the ninja craze had not started yet. The first End of the Ninja just started, and it was a modern success. It just came out. Sho Kutsugi was the co-star, and Mike Stone was the star, and it was a big movie, had just come out, but they wanted to take it to the next level. So I went out that I met with, you know, the producers, Globus and Menachem Golan, and we met and spoke, and, you know, they offered me the deal. And Mike Stone wasn't going to be in it, but instead Sho Kutsugi would be the ninja. And Sho was so wrapped up in this. He'd been training for a lifetime for this experience. And the oddest thing is about this first film, the wonderful thing is you've had one of your guests on your show, Stephen Lambert, who's phenomenal. I've worked a lot of movies and TV shows. He's the single best stunt coordinator I had ever seen in my life. He's like Spider-Man. You just have to be there to appreciate it. The only other person I've ever seen can do what he can do is Jackie Chan. And Jackie Chan in the Jackie Chan would, you know, we would, you know, I lived with him for a couple of months in Spain while we did this film in Barcelona, and he wanted to practice his English with me. He wanted to sing to me all the time, and he just, you know, he loved trying to impress me. And one day he said he could run up a wall, and I said, Jackie, you cannot run up a wall. He just ran up the wall. Well, guess what? Stephen Lambert, he's like that too. I saw Steve do stuff like, I still to this day don't believe what I saw, and I know I've never seen anybody else ever do what he's done. I saw him go between two buildings in Revenge of the Ninja. We had a stunt, and he was doubling Shokasugi as the bad ninja, and he was all in black.
Mm-hmm.
And he went between two twin towers in Los Angeles with just this one rope, nothing. I mean, not secured, no mm-hmm. net. I mean, we're up, I don't know, 20, 30 stories high. And I remember watching it going, that guy's crazy. He's totally yes. insane. One yes. take. One take. He kicked the windows out, landed on the windshield. I remember him telling me it was just all luck that it was performed. It was like a miracle that he did it. And it was one take. And I went, oh, my gosh, this guy's good.
So, yeah, I've heard, yeah, you're right. He does crazy things, and he told me things, and I was like, wow. And I says, yeah, you're like one of the best. He goes, no, I'm not. And I'm like, oh, he's so modest. He's
oh, no.
And
listen,
not. I call
he's,
him. Yes,
he's
awesome.
He's so good. He's good. You know, I know what I know my limits and my limitations. And, you know, I think I'm a wonderful athlete, and I've proven myself over the years, but still, I'm limited. I had the greatest Chinese stuntman that would double me at times. And, you know, so mm-hmm. when you see me doing pirouettes and three flips, that's not me. That's the Chinese stuntman doing that. But I don't think if Stephen Lambert was the actual star, nobody would double him. He's just one of those, mm-hmm. like Jackie Chan, where he could do all of his own stunts. I mean, it reminds me of a Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is that gifted. He can do all his own stunts. But I was limited. My favorite person on the set was the guy that doubled me. I always go, thank God you're here. But,
oh, my gosh.
But to get back to this revenge, of all the irony of ironies, when I it's my first film, so I had been in one other film before, and it was Force 5 with Joe Louis and 50 other phenomenal martial artists, but I was just a stunt guy. I was just, you know, I had a small role in that and wasn't one of the stars. So that was my first experience. But working with Richard Norton and Benny Urquidez and all these great mm-hmm. athletes, I really loved it. But my first actual starring role was Revenge of the Ninja. So I get to the set, and I'm watching it, and literally, it really defied everything that I thought a movie set would be. Everything was lower budget than I thought. All the blood and the guts and the violence was so over the top. And I'm thinking the entire time, my first movie is the worst movie in the history of movies. The whole time I'm thinking that. And I'm like going, because Shokasugi, I don't know if anybody saw this film, but a lot of people did. It was in the top 10 when it first came out. I mean, mm-hmm. I have a copy of Newsweek when it first came out. It's number 3 for the week, and it beat movies like you couldn't even imagine. I mean, it beat classic movies for that week. You know, so Revenge of the Ninja was picked up by MGM. It was the first movie ever to be picked up by MGM. They did what we call a national release. They put it in every major theater in the country. We had a premiere for me personally in Atlanta, and they had a premiere for the film in Los Angeles. I had my own premiere for my first film. I had hundreds of people in the premiere. They had news came out, red carpet, everything for my first film. And I just remember I was so embarrassed because all I could remember while I filmed it was how over-the-top bloody it was. Shokasugi, and I'm such a realist, every scene Sho would pull out, literally, I'm not being facetious, he would pull out new weapons out of his gi. And he pulled out like, it's like a comedy, he'd pull out like a bazooka. You know, you go, where'd you get that from? He jumps in the water and comes out with 19 weapons. And I'm like, I'm the kind of guy that goes, where did that come from? But nobody cared. Nobody in the audience cared. It was like, oh, good. He literally had like 26 weapons on him. You couldn't even put all these weapons in the truck. There were so many. But yet, he kept on pulling them out of his ninja outfit. So my thinking is it's going to be the worst movie ever made. I'm going to be embarrassed. And I remember I made the worst comment I ever made at the end of the first premiere. The first premiere, I watched it, and I didn't watch it and think any different. I still thought it was the bloodiest movie I'd ever seen. And they interviewed me, and there was a big article in the newspaper, the Atlanta Journal, and it said, Keith Vitale's first film, Revenge of the Ninja, thinks it was overdone and overviolent. Do you know, it didn't take an hour before Priscilla McDonald had called me from Canon Films yelling at me, going, don't you ever put down a movie that you're ever in again. So I learned my first lesson. I learned it right off the bat. So when you're in a film and you're doing any kind of publicity, you always talk about how great the film is. And I learned but I was just shocked. Little did I know, because they put that film in every theater in the country, that it became an overnight sensation. It started the ninja craze. The ninja, these people selling ninja outfits, they couldn't even sell them quick enough. They couldn't produce ninja outfits. People were buying them and dressing in them, watching ninja shows at home. And then how many ninja craze movies are out there now because of that one film? I've never been more wrong about a movie in my life than I was Revenge of the Ninja.
Oh, I'm telling you, ninja's awesome. I always say, everybody that's on my show, ninjas are sexy. I don't know what it is. It's something about, maybe it's, someone was saying, maybe it's because, like, sneaky guys, or because it's just my evil side or something. I was like, I love them. I just always wanted to be a ninja. I don't know what it is about them where it's like you can just seem to do anything, and you're in disguise, and you can get away. So it seems like ninjas rule.
No, and they did. And believe it or not, Sho was about 6 foot tall, great athlete. You know, he was tall for Japanese. He had beautiful kicks, great technique. And what he could do, more on the technical aspect of filmmaking, is he worked his facial expressions as much as he worked his technique. And he would get in front of the mirror for an hour. And it was kind of nice to see, when I did a movie with Jackie Chan does the same thing. He gets in front of the mirror and works on facial expressions. And because the movie's being told by your face, you know, just the action is aesthetically beautiful. Whatever you're doing is fine. The movie's being told by the stunt guy reacting to your technique. And then when the camera gets back to you and the close-ups on your face tells a story. Whatever it does, whatever the facial expression is, it moves it to the next, you know, fear, anger, happiness. Whatever that emotion is, you have to be able to project that with your face. Sho Kasugi and Jackie Chan were the two best I ever saw doing that. I can tell you the two worst. Chuck Norris and myself, we were the two worst doing that. You know why? Because we were fighters first. And Chuck Norris and I, we talk about this all the time. We have to practice. We really do. We have to really... It's not normal for us to show emotion in a scene where we're fighting and screaming, because we were fighters. And when you're fighting, it's second nature that you don't project weakness. You don't ever project pain or injury. So get this. For 12 years, Keith Strandberg, which I'll talk about in a minute, and Michael DiPasquale, we started this acting film class in New York. And we taught people how to break into films through stunt fighting and karate fighting, and how to be that person that's going to make that star look good. And so we were always talking about ways to project and ways to make the other fighter look better. And that's how you break into films. It's, you know, people say, well, I want to be the star, and I always go, they've already got the star by the time it comes to your town. Now they're casting other roles. I will teach you how to be that person that makes that star look so good that they'll want to use you again and again. And we put over 100 people in the films by, you know, teaching people about the dynamics of stunt fighting and reactions and all of that. It's an art, as you well know.
Definitely. I know that for a fact. I know that firsthand, because I do work on sets, like indie films and stuff, and I know what you're talking about, expressions, because I'm good at, like, improv, too. I've done dinner theater and stuff where I got paid, and my expressions are priceless, and that's, you know, doing comedy and action and, you know, seeing stuff and trying to look more up about your interviews and stuff, right? And I saw this when you were talking about it, and I was getting ready to work, and I just happened to Keith Vitale interview, right? And of all the interviews I see, you were talking about Jackie, right? And I'm like, I think you were talking about, I think you thought you killed Jackie Chan. It was like,
oh,
what?
Yeah,
what happened? And it was like, I think I was on Wheels on Nails or something, and you were
exactly.
like, you're afraid to break character. I probably would have pooped my pants. I'm like, oh, I probably would have broke character because I'm just like, oh, because I'm so compassionate. I don't want people to get hurt. Like,
right.
what? I mean, can you talk about that experience?
Because yeah.
I really want to know. I really
yeah.
do.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You never, ever, 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 ever break character until you hear that, you know, that director yell cut. And because what happens is sometimes while the director doesn't want to have an injury or doesn't want to see something happen like that, if it's something they can use, they'll still put it in the film. Now, they don't want it, but if it's something that's so dynamic, they'll go, I'm sorry Jackie Chan got hurt, but we'd love to see it in the film. And so when I first went out to work with Jackie, I flew out to Barcelona, and Jackie and Benny Urquidez and I were the only two Americans, and it was a full Chinese cast. And we're getting ready to do this scene, and it's so incredible because it was my second scene with Jackie, fight scene. And they realized that I had fairly good jumping skills and technique, and I was just known for being a good kicker. And Benny Urquidez was more known for being a really enclosed and powerful, you know, with multiple moves and just dynamic kind of a fighter. But he didn't have the aesthetic beauty that I had with the long-range weapons because I had a taekwondo background. And Benny's a Japanese stylist. He looks Japanese. He's 5'6", and he punches powerful like that. So anyway, they wanted to exploit my long legs and my movement and the whole bit. So I said, great. And so Jackie has this scene. Sammo Hung, who's very famous in Hong Kong, he's the director. He's behind the camera. And he says, Keith, what I want you to do is this. Benny Urquidez is fighting Jackie Chan. Jackie is going to do a jump spinning kick over Benny Urquidez. When he does a spinning kick over Benny's head, before he lands, when he does a 360, I want you to time your sidekick and kick him in the chest. Can you do that? And I said, sure, no problem, do it. So everything's set up, and there's 100 people out there watching, and there's it's phenomenal. I'm all excited about it. I have so confident I have one of the best sidekicks in the world. Guaranteed I do. I mean, I was a fighter. I know I have one of the best sidekicks in the world. And, of course, that's my right leg. So now Jackie Chan, Sammo says, ready? And I got my stance and my, you know, I was ready to do the scene. And Sammo Hung, the director, looks at me and says, what are you doing? I went, well, I'm ready. He goes, no, change sides. And I went, oh, no. You don't want me kicking my left leg. It's my right leg that I can do all these wonderful things with. My left leg is powerful, but I don't know where it goes half the time. He says, Keith, the camera's right here. The camera's here. Do you want me to? And he's smart, of course. He goes, he's right. He goes, you want me to do a total resetup with the cameras and positions because you don't want to change sides? And I felt stupid. I said, oh, of course not. I can do it. Because he wants me to enter with my face on camera. So I did it. I put left side forward and action. Jack, you know, the fight starts. Jackie does a jump spinning kick. I slide up and I kick him with my left foot. And I almost kill him. I literally almost kill him. He rolls. He falls on the ground. He's screaming, he's crying, and the crying part took me by surprise, because in America, we're from the West, you know, and it's innate. I don't know, it's like something genetic. All parents, you know, get tough, tell your kids, get tough, don't cry, don't show pain, all these things, you know. But when you're from the East and you're really a film star, you make your living projecting. You make your living showing everything. I mean, that's your job. And when I came to him, he literally just went into pain and projected all that pain. And I went, why is he crying? That's my first reaction. And he's really upset with me. And he's really upset. The director's upset. I mean, not the director. Everybody's upset except for the director. Sammo Hung and Jackie were having some personal, because they're big brothers. They all went to the same Chinese school together.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so they're mad. They're having some kind of brotherhood fight. And Sammo is taking it out on Jackie using me. And so he looks at me in front of the entire crew, And three people are standing over Jackie, ministering to him. He's on the ground in pain. The producer is screaming, calling me names. And Jackie and Samuel tells everybody to shut up, and Samuel Hung says, Keith. And I said, I knew he was going to say these words, you're fired, go back home. He says, good job. But he says, I need to see more power. More power. And I went, oh, my gosh, more power. And I did that scene no less than 10 times. On the 10th time, I caught him in the throat. And that's when I broke. And when I caught him in the throat, I knew I thought I killed him. And I stopped. And when I stopped, that's when the director got mad at me. He goes, don't ever stop. Don't ever stop. You never stop until I say cut. Ever. And he was yelling at me. And because he wanted to keep that scene where, because I broke character. You know, I was supposed to stand over him while he's on the ground screaming in pain. I didn't. I just stopped because I went down to see if I killed him. Well, you want to talk about irony? Watch this. So a month later, I have to do a fight scene where I'm fighting Sammo Hung and Yong Bao, who's the other star. Yeah. I'm doing two against one. I'm the one, they're two. And they have weapons. I have no weapons. And I don't know if you've ever – not many Westerners have ever had to do this, but it's extremely tough because it's all rhythmical. You have to have great timing. And you better have your act together because when those weapons are going over your head and around you, you've got to duck and jump. You know, so it was something I just had to really perfect. Well, in the course of it, I'm supposed to do a jump spinning kick, and Sammo Hung has his spear. We're fighting with the spear. And I'm supposed to break the spear and then do a round kick to his head and knock him out. And so doing one of the takes, I did a jump spinning kick, went through the spear, broke the spear, and caught him in the head and knocked him out. He went out of concussion. So now here's your director. Here's your director, famous, one of the most famous men in Hong Kong. He's out, and guess what? I'm not breaking character. And I stood in my stance over him, and nobody on the set broke character. Nobody. Nobody. So 3 minutes, 4 minutes go by, we're standing there till he wakes up. He wakes up, he rolls over, he looks at everybody, he goes, he says cut, and then I relax. I know I'm fired. He gets up. He screams at everybody in Chinese. And I think I know what he's saying. I'm thinking he's saying, look, I just did this. I took this, and I'm your director. If I can take it, you can take it. He comes over and gives me in a bear hug. He holds me in a bear hug and squeezes me so tight and goes, good technique, good power, good power. Let's do it again.
No.
I did that scene, one scene, 50 times. Where it's multiple fighting, multiple kicks. I fought full contact. I fought all over the world. I fought some of the toughest fighters in the world. I never, ever had to be in shape as much as I was for that one scene. Because could you imagine doing a fight scene 50 times? 50 times. I changed clothes one time because it was soaking wet. I had a full suit on. But 50 times, the director came and was saying, again, because of all the weapons and all the, you know, how hard it was. But I went, oh, my goodness. But I learned you don't ever, ever break character. You just stay there till whatever.
I learned no matter what. I'll have to remember that because I've been, like, doing some films and stuff, and I'm playing a lead in a film called Valkyrie. It's a Valkyrie. So when I'm on set, no matter what, stay in character. Even if I get knocked out, stay in character. Okay? I'll just keep that in mind.
And, you know, you know, it's not that I'm a great actor and I can teach, but Keith Strandberg, who's a great writer, I act and I was a fighter. Michael DePasquale is a good martial artist. We knew enough about what it took, and we hired the right people. We had a lot of great people, Don Wilson, all these great guys come out and help us with the camps. But we'd have people, sometimes 100 people around the world would fly in to learn how to break into films. And I always told them my first bit of advice. All of it is, I said, how many guys here want to be the next Jackie Chan or Bruce Lee? All these guys, and they all, you know, Claude Van Damme, they had all these stars, Jet Li. They all raise their hands, and I go, guys, you're taking the wrong approach. I said, now here, let me tell you something from somebody that has experience. And I've casted for films, so I know. Every producer is looking for the next bright, good thing. We're not looking for the next Jackie Chan, or they've already found Jackie Chan. They don't want to see a guy that looks like Van Damme. They want to see somebody unique and different. You be yourself. The best advice I can give to anybody is you've got to be so much yourself within yourself and be different. You don't want to be like anybody else. And everybody tries to be like somebody else. I'm going, guys, I have to retrain how you think, especially the fight choreography. And we would put fight scenes together and teach them how, because learning how to do the reactions is the most important thing about a fight scene. And every martial artist is taught from day one not to telegraph moves. And so from day one, I tell them, I have to totally have you rethink everything that you're doing. It's great that you're a martial artist, but let me tell you something. This is not martial arts. This is movie making. And in movie making, when you have a technique that's so fast that when you throw it, the audience doesn't see it, then it loses its impact. What we like you to do is telegraph every move. And you do that with big sweeping motions with your arms and facial expressions, and you sell it. And that's called selling the technique. But what you don't want to do is be lightning fast to where nobody saw it, so it lost its impact. Well, and the second thing is the actor that you're hitting can react because it's too fast. So what you have to do is you have to be able to learn how to telegraph your techniques. And I've had people from around the world going, I'm a 10th degree martial artist, world champion, and I never telegraph. And I go, here's my best advice. Go back, get on your plane, and go home. And I said, all of you, everybody here that thinks they're a world champion, what world are you talking about? I mean, I fought all over the world. How many world champions can you have? And I go, guys, this is the movie world. It has nothing to do with being a world champion. And the hardest thing for world champions and for great martial artists to have to deal with is you go out for a casting and you audition, and there's a white belt that gets the part over you, and you're humiliated. And these guys are going, I'm an 8th degree best fighter of all time. And I go, yes, but guess what? This white belt, you should see how he reacts. You should see his facial, projections. You should see how he flips. You should see how he's selling everything he's doing. Yeah, you can do a kata, whatever you can do. Who cares? But they go, but don't you know who I am? I go, no, I don't care who you are. It has people watching the film. Nobody cares. No, it's not about who you are. It's about only one thing counts. You've got to sell every technique to make that star look great. And I promise you that if you can make that star look good, because every time he punches or kicks, if you can sell it in a way that makes him look powerful, he's going to want to keep you around and use you again and again. And that's been our secret for success. We get our guys and girls reacting so phenomenally that these people want to hire these guys and girls because they go, oh, my gosh, I can just do a baby backflip. This guy did a double flip, something like that. So that's the art of breaking into films. Once you've got your foot in the door, now it's up to you to show the producers and directors, who you are with your attitude and what you can do. But projection with your face, like I said, Chuck Norris and I, Chuck called me up after Revenge of the Ninja, and he says, Keith, you did really good. And I said, Chuck, I'm embarrassed. My reactions just aren't there. He goes, I know. I have a difficulty with the same thing. He says, because we're fighters. When we fight in the ring, somebody hits us with a kick. We don't go, owie, we don't show it. What we do is we're cold face. Yeah. We're blank. We're so blank. Now, do that for 10 years, and it's second nature. It's genetics almost. And so now the director says action. You get caught up in the action. You revert back on what you've done for 10 years, and that is not to show pain or not to show projections at all. Later in my career, and really great for Chuck Norris, he really did great with Walker. But you started showing him. But when we first started, for fighters like me and Chuck, it was more difficult for us. We just don't show facial expressions. We're not taught to.
Yeah, because it even showed at that time when he, the film where he had to fight Bruce Lee, and he was very, his face was just this look like his eyeballs didn't even blink, like his eyelids didn't even blink when we were facing him. And it's the question I don't even ask anymore, I hate when people ask this question that they're going to ask, and it's like, who do you think's better, so-and-so or so-and-so, who's better, Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris, blah, 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 this and that. And people always like to throw at me because, I like a lot of Asian martial artists. I'm like, oh, Chuck Norris is better and blah, blah. And it's apples compared to oranges. They're different martial artists. It's like,
right.
I don't even
right.
like to think like that, and it's like I kind of think that's almost kind of disrespectful when people go to ask their questions. Of course, they don't understand, you know. I mean, even when they go to ask, like, Jackie, who do you think's better, you or Bruce Lee? And I can just
right,
imagine,
right.
And it's like, why do you want to ask someone that question? That's not a question to ask. You know, it's kind of
But you've hit on a sore spot. That's a great point you brought up, and nobody talks about this, so this is such a great point. But Jackie, what he did at the beginning of his career, he hired people like myself and Benny Urquidez, Richard Norton. He hired the very best in the world that were American so he could show that he could beat them. That was his objective. Not just to get the best talent, but people believe what they see on film. People believe Chuck Norris was better than that Bruce Lee was better than Chuck Norris because guess what? He beat him in that film. So we know when you look at it in one perspective, it's a movie. But when you look at it from the world's perspective, oh, no, Bruce Lee is better because he won that fight scene. And you go, but, you know, it's so insane, but it's insane only to us, but not the world, not people that watch films. So that's why you have these questions come up all the time. And we've actually had people in films go, I'm not going to lose to this person. And I go, what do you mean you're not going to lose to him? He says, well, I'm a better fighter. I don't want to lose to him. I go, it's in the dialogue. It's in the script. You can't win. You're the bad guy. But, you know, they have such egos that they go, no, I'm not going to lose. I never lose. I've never lost. Guess what? Go home. I have no patience for them. You won't. This to me is fascinating. I remember I did a couple episodes for Nash Bridges with Cheech and Don Johnson.
Don Johnson.
And
wonderful
TV shows. I did two different episodes. I was the bad guy in two episodes. And the first one, I did it with my good friend Joe Hess, and we had a great fight scene. And it was phenomenal. I love talking about that fight scene. But what my point is, on the second time I went to do it, the producer calls me up and says, Keith, I want to offer you a role in Nash Bridges. Would you be interested? I said, I'd love to. Sure. What is it? They said, well, we want you to fight Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, no.
He's that, yeah. And I went, wonderful, wonderful. No, this sounds great. Send me the script. You know what she said? She says, but we just want to tell you beforehand that you lose. And I said, and? She says, well, I just want to let you know you don't win this fight. I went, I'm not a wrestler. No, if it's in the script, you do what's in the script. She goes, oh, my God, thank goodness you're an actor. She says, we deal with wrestlers sometimes, and they go, no, I'm not going to lose. I don't care. It's not you put in the script where I win. And I said, no, listen, I'm an actor. Don't worry about it. Whatever is in the script, I do, of course. But she had to warn me ahead of time, that I was going to lose that fight scene. And I loved that fight scene. I mean, he literally – this was a fight scene that I became a stuntman and not an actor. Even though, other ones I starred in, these two TV shows, I was basically the stuntman. And the fight scene with Stone Cold, it started out to where we choreographed it. I had to tackle him. And when there's 100 people at this wedding, right in San Francisco, right off the bay, and the mayor of San Francisco is there, Don Johnson, the whole cast, everybody's there because we're at a wedding in the film. And I break up the wedding being the bad guy, and the cop is the good guy is Steve Austin. So he's a very famous wrestler, huge. So we rehearsed it where I tackle him. He gets up. We do some kicks and punches. We fight. He picks me up over his head, and I'm wearing a gator back on my back for protection. And then there's this big table with champagne glasses and all this stuff on it and for punch bowl. He used to take me over his head. He used to break me in half over the bowl on that and collapse the table. And when he picked me up over his head, you know, and broke it down. But before I get there, the first thing we did was we choreographed it. Everything looked good. The director says, action. And this is so funny. I ran, and I had to tackle Steve Austin. And I hit him, and you would have thought it was like one of those cartoons when Bugs Bunny hits that big, strong guy. I hit him and bounced straight back to the ground. He didn't move a muscle.
Oh.
He was just standing up. I hit the ground. Every bone in my body hurt. It was like running into a tree. It was like running into an oak tree, full power, full speed. And the director goes, cut, cut, you okay? And I laughed, and I said, Steve, would you mind going with the fall just a little bit? And he laughed. He said, okay, buddy, no problem. I said, how strong can anybody be? I mean, he just, I guess he buckled up and got ready for the tackle. I didn't move an inch. He didn't move an inch. So anyway, so now the next time he did go with it, we fall, we get up, we have a great fight scene. He picks me up over his head. He throws me down, and he breaks me in half. And I scream, and I hit the ground. The director goes, cut, cut. He came out of scene. He thought I was hurt. And he goes, stop. Oh, my God, are you okay? And I went, yeah, I'm fine. He goes, oh, my God, it looks so real. He said, how are you not dead? I went, we're stunt guys. We just do it. And he goes, oh, my God. He said, I thought you were dead. He says, really? He says, I've never seen anything like it. He said, all right, let's do it again. They have to shower me, dress me up, do my hair again, put me in another clothes, get a new table, and set the whole scene up all over again. And, of course, I get a bump up. I get paid again for the stunt, so which is great. And then I do the stunt. Yeah, and I do the stunt again. The director goes, oh, man, that was great. He says, you sold it so well, I thought you were actually hurt. And that's a compliment to those that do stunts. When somebody tells you that, and the first time I did I did a lot of films with great guys, but I'm so happy about what I accomplished with Mash Bridges because, you know, it's a number one TV show at the time, and it was a big deal, and they were bringing me out, and it was on a Friday. It was the last day of shooting. Don Johnson's with Cheech, and he's shooting, and he's in a really bad mood, and he's a producer, and he's shooting scenes on another set. I'm in this set, and I've been working all day with the fight choreographer. And they said, put together a fight scene. Now, I don't talk. I mean, this fight, there's a whole fight crew. They put it together. Joe Hess and I are two bounty hunters. We come in to go after Don Johnson, but we end up fighting each other in a big fight scene. So anyway, we put the fight scene together, and we rehearse. The guy, after we put it all together, he filmed it. He showed it to Don Johnson, and Don Johnson got so pissed off. We were back at our hotel room. Don Johnson says, get Vitaly and Joey Hess back. He says, it's terrible. I don't like any of it. Now, we're just doing what the film choreographer put together. And he says, tell that guy. And the guy was a great, great guy. I can't think of his name. But he goes, I want it gritty. I want it tough. I don't want the beauty of jump kicks and all that crap. I want a tough, mean fight. So they got us back to the set. We rehearsed some more. He said, guys, he said, we got to get this. He says, this is the last shot of the night. And Don Johnson and Cheech are coming to watch it because they're in the fight. They're in the scene itself. So Don Johnson and Cheech come over, and they said, have you guys changed it up? And talking to the fight choreographer, and he says, yeah, we've changed it up. He goes, how do you think it looks? And the guy goes, he says, Don, I promise you're going to love it. Don says, can we see some of it? And then sure. He says, sure. He goes, Keith, you and Joe ready? We said, fine. We got the cameras. Everything was set up. He said, let me see you just walk it through a little bit, 50%, and then we'll shoot afterwards if it's good. Well, we did it, but we didn't do 50%. We did it 100%. And when we did it, Don Johnson and Cheech stood up clapping. They were clapping. They just went berserk. They went, oh, my God. He said, are you not hurt? And then the directors are going, you've got to be hurt. And then I went, and again, this scene, Joe Hess is 350 pounds. He picks it up over his head. I have a gator back again, and he breaks me over a coffee table. So both times I got thrown over a coffee table and broken up. But during the fight scene, it looks like we're killing each other. And the director came over, and he says, I've been doing this for a long time. He said, I would have sworn every punch hit, and you guys were hitting each other. I said, guess what? We never hit each other once. They're misses. We're just reacting to it. He goes, I swear we can't see it. You know why? Because Joe was one of our co-teachers, and we taught stunt fighting and how to do reactions, and we made sure where the camera angles are that you never know if we're being hit or not. But Don Johnson and Cheech came over, and they said, let's film it. Can you guys go right back and do it again? I said, well, give me like 5 minutes to get my wind back. He goes, guys, if you can do exactly that again, he said, I will love it. And then we did it, and it was just one shot, one scene, one take. They clapped again. Don Johnson says, I rarely take photographs of my stars like this. He said, but I'm going to take them with you. Chase says, come here and says, take a bunch of pictures with Keith and Joe Hess. And then we took a bunch of pictures. He goes, I'm going to tell you, he says, guys, that was wonderful. He says, I honestly believed you were hitting each other. And that to me was so wonderful, hearing that from the director and everybody and all the stars, because – It's when you sell something that they can't tell if you were hit or not. And Joe and I never hit each other one time. Now, he picked me up and crashed me, but Rodney, he never hit me in the head, none of that stuff. But we sold it so well from the angles that you would have sworn we were killing each other. So those were two good experiences for us.
Well, what do you have you ever, it sounds like, you pretty much know what you're doing, but have you had any, like, how can I say, battle scars or injuries or something?
Only during the one film, Super Fights, we did it with Keith Strandberg, and it's a Chinese production, money-wise, it was with Golden Harvest. N.G. Ewing is the producer from Hong Kong. And his main producer for most of his films was a guy named Keith Strandberg, who later became my best friend and still is my best friend. And we produce films together, and we write together, we do sports together, and to this day we're best friends. But Keith speaks fluent Chinese. Keith writes fluent Chinese. I mean, he's phenomenal. He has to be the smartest guy I think I've ever met in my life. And Keith is a writer, and he writes for NG. So Keith and I were good friends at the time, and I had done a couple films under my belt, two or three, and he said, I want you to star in this film called Super Fights with a young actor called Brandon Gaines. He's a young guy out of California. He's a new actor, and you're going to have to bring him along. You've done some films. You're going to be the bad guy, and he's going to be the good guy. And we did this film, and the fight scenes were so long and so hard because what they do in the Chinese productions, they dedicate 7 days, and 7 days are usually 14, 16, 18-hour days. And mm-hmm. You get up early in the morning, you're filming at 7 in the morning, and you're still 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, you're still filming. Now, it's hard for the set. It's hard for everybody. Imagine if you're the fighter and you're having to do scene after scene after take, then while you're resting, you're doing inserts. Because they just finished maybe a few techniques, in the progression of a fight scene, and then they'll set the cameras to come in for close-ups. And the close-ups are hitting you. And the way they hit you in these close-ups is the Chinese have an act. What they do is they take a shoe, the tennis shoe, they spray it black like a real shoe, they put their sock in their hand, and they put the shoe in their hands. And then for the close-up, he takes, one of the actors – or the stuntmen, they take their hand with the shoe on it, and then the director says, ready, action, and then he takes the foot, the shoe, and they literally hit you in the head with the shoe. And then there's usually some talcum powder. Yeah, and there's some talcum powder on the shoe itself, so when it hits you in the head, there's some powder that comes off at the same time. So those are the inserts. So when you say, I could have sworn he got hit, well, those movies, they do get hit, but they're not hit full force. They're actually inserts where usually somebody's got their hand in the shoe or is controlled. So, and that film, we got shot so long and it was so hard because it was shot in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It was during a hot summer. It was 103 degrees outside. We're in a gigantic warehouse. You can't turn on the air because if the air conditioner is on, it's bad for sound. So it was literally over 110 degrees. We had the spectators in the audience for this movie were passing out and having to go to the hospital. Those were the spectators that were sitting for the audience that were in the movies, the extras. And finally, Brandon Gaines passed out, and I thought he was going to have a heart attack and just die. But there was times where we can't move, and what they do is the Chinese, they have these numbing sprays, and they spray your legs.
Yeah.
They just spray it, and they kill. What they do is they kill the pain, they numb it, and then they go continue. Well, you're damaging your muscle when you do that, and the next day your leg's actually black and blue. But actually, that's really the only time I got hurt, except for the Jackie Chan film, where it was purpose. I had knocked out Jackie. You remember I told you in the Jackie Chan film, Wills and Mills? I had hurt Jackie Chan so many times. I had knocked out Sammo Hung, and the other guy, his name is Yuan Bao. He's a small Chinese, wonderful actor, big movie star in Hong Kong and China. The whole world knows him. And I had a really dynamic fight scene with him. And what happened was, as we were fighting, I'm supposed to do this really dynamic, intricate scene, and we rehearsed and we did it. At the end, he's supposed to take this vase, there's a vase with champagne, he's supposed to hit over my head. And I said, sure, let's do the scene. Well, what happened was the entire Chinese set showed up, like 100 people. The crew showed up. And I went, what's going on? Everybody's laughing. Everybody's excited. It's one of the last scenes of the whole shoot. And then I said, Jackie, what's going on? And Sammo Hung says, our time to get you back, because you hurt everybody. I said, what do you mean get me back?
Oh, no.
He says, now it's our turn. Now it's our turn. I said, so what am I going to do? And he literally had this 5 ceramic vases. Now, just think about a vase you pour champagne out of. They were ceramic. You know, they're not porcelain. They're not breakaway glass. They're not breakaway anything. They're ceramic. And he says, I want you to fill it. And I took my hand and I said, Jackie, this will kill me. This will knock me out and kill me. And he goes, oh, no problem. He says, the problem is if you don't do good your first take, he says, we'll do 5 more takes. No. So I was worried about it. So anyway, I went, well, it's probably going to be some kind of breakaway and it probably won't be that hard. But, you know, think about this. If somebody takes a water jug or a milk jug and fills it up with water, and you stand there and let somebody hit you with a plastic water jug full on the head, would that hurt? Of course.
Yeah.
It would knock you out. Imagine a ceramic vase that has density and strong. Oh, my gosh. So I did the fight scene, and I ran, and I chased Yuan Bao in this great fight scene. And at the end of it, I do a flying sidekick, and I land in the chair. He lands on the couch, and we face each other. And on there's a table between us, and he used to grab this glass of champagne and throw it into my eyes. And when I'm grabbing my face, he used to take this jug, this vase, and hit me over the head. And I know it's coming. So we do the scene. He throws the champagne in my face. I thought it was going to be water, but it was really champagne. And it stung my eyes. It hurt my eyes so bad, so I put my hands over my face because it was burning. And I went, all right, tense up because it's coming. Next thing I know, I get just the crap knocked out of me so hard that I stumbled 2 or 3 steps, and I smile because the last thing I thought of before I passed out was, I'm the dumbest person on the planet to allow these people to knock me out. And I went out. I was unconscious. And guess what? I woke up, and they all 100 of them were clapping. All clapping and tapping on my back going, oh. It was like they were so happy to get me at the end. And I, oh, good, good, good. You're a good sport for doing that. And I went, and guess what? That last fight scene, that little thing we did together, it's on one of the tapes you can buy for top fight scenes of all time. That was chosen as one of the best fight scenes of all time. So, I thought it was really wonderful. It was worth that pain to be chosen as one of the fight scenes. And Benny's fight scene was 10 times that. It was so good. Do you know how I mentioned when I was on the set watching Revenge of the Ninja that I thought it was the worst movie I'd ever seen? It was so bad watching it. There's no editing. There's no sound. There's no music. There's no post-production. There's no, you know, close-up. You just see it for what it is. And you see a guy pulling out, like, 18 weapons out of his, and you're going, oh, my gosh. And then you see this hose of blood coming out from his inside of his ninja outfit and literally spraying, like, enough for 100 people. And you're going, oh, I'm so embarrassed. That's what I thought. The reverse is different. Totally reverse about when I did the Jackie Chan film. Every scene in the Jackie Chan film, I thought it was the most aesthetically, beautifully shot, phenomenal scene I had ever seen in my life. I'm like watching every cut, every take of Jackie Chan Benny Yukitas. I kept on going, oh my God, this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen in person. There's no post-production, there's no music, there's no sound effects, and yet in person it was breathtaking. That's how good of quality the Chinese are when they make a film. That's how good Jackie Chan's production was with Sammo Hung. Cold filming. I was away, and I knew that film would be good because When I saw it in person, I said, it can only get better. And the film did really well. It didn't do big here in America, but it did great all over the world.
Yeah, I think, you know what it is, too? I think more and more now, you're capable of getting films from other countries. Now, I think years ago, it was really kind of hard. We only had, like, cable and stuff, and you had to wait for it to come on VHS.
Right.
But now, the way we have the internet and everything, it's really amazing that you can get those films from other, you know, countries, and they would, you know, dub it and stuff, too. A lot of times, I think Jackie's films, they would have different titles, too. Like, it would have
right.
a couple of titles. It'd be one title in this country and here, or it would be a different title. But when you're talking about working on the set, you were working with Jackie and his two brothers, and I'm like, wow, they really are crazy. You're like talking about it, like people are like, how can you tell that Jackie Chan's crazy? And it's like, well, basically any stunt guy, like you or anybody, stunt guy Steven or anybody, what kind of normal person is going to go doing all this stuff? So you got to be kind of a little nuts to really do this
yeah.
stuff, but you got to know what you're doing when you're doing it.
They are so talented that, you know, they would put together fight scenes. You know, they would just do it there. They would just put it together, and they think, how about this, this, and this? The thing I teach at all the film camps, and I've taught everybody, is about rhythm. And I always tell them the story. I said the first scene I had with Jackie Chan was we had an outdoor scene to do, and Jackie had never seen me before, do any kicks or techniques. So the cameras are set up, and the crew's there. Everybody's there, and I'm nervous. This is my first fight scene with Jackie Chan. And Benny Akita's mm-hmm. and I, and they haven't shown us one technique, nothing. So Samuel goes, Keith, you ready? And I went, yes, sir, I'm ready, but ready to do what? Nobody's shown me anything. What's the fight scene? He said, oh, talk to Jackie. And Jackie there goes, he says, Keith, he says, do me a favor. And I said, yeah. He goes, I want you to do, and he name some kicks and do all this stuff. So I did it, and he goes, very good, very good. Okay, good, good, good. And I said, well, is that it? He goes, yeah. He says, now I'm going to work out the fight scene. I said, what do you mean? And he started on his leg, and he took his hands, and he started playing the drums on his leg. Now, visually think about this. If you listen to this, he's standing there, and he takes his hands, and he plays a beat on his leg. And he went, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4. And he started doing that. I said, what are you doing? He says, I'm working out the beat of the fight scene. I said, the beat, he says, Keith, the fight scene's all about rhythm. He says, let me tell you a story. He says, take the two best fighters in the world. He says, have them fight each other on film. He says, but if there's no rhythm, no, you know, nothing timed, he says, subconsciously you're going to be watching it at home going, oh, this is awful, they're terrible. He says, so the two best in the world are going to appear to you as being awful if there's not a rhythm to it. He says, so what I do is I develop the rhythm, the beat first, and then I put your movements to the beat. He says, that's how I choreograph the films. Now, I wanted to just say, stop, let me get my pad, let me write this down word for word, and let me photograph this and film it, and then because it's phenomenal. That's called 101. That's the best teaching in the world, isn't it? I'm learning hands-on from the best fighter of all time on film, Jackie Chan, or between him and Bruce Lee. And I went, oh, my gosh, what a phenomenal lesson. What a great lesson. And it's mm-hmm. the beat. It's the rhythm. And then we work the beat. It's like a dance move. You know, you work 1, 2, 3, and you do it with projection and speed and power. And I went, oh, this guy is a genius. This guy, I don't care if you like him or not, this guy is phenomenal. And he would show off all the time. We had the castle in one of the scenes, and there's a castle. It's 1,000 years old, and it has a tall wall that you have to get over to get in this castle, other than the big doors. And Jackie goes, Keith, what do you think? I said, it's a night shoot. He says, what do you think? How should I get over this castle wall? And I went, I don't know. I'm dumb as a rock. I went, unless you propel it or use some kind of cable or whatever. He goes, no. And he said something in Chinese, and somebody handed him some sticks. And they were like, really like Eskrima sticks, or really, you know, bamboo hard. And he took a run at the wall, and the wall had pit holes in it. And he ran up with this one stick, and he ran up about 10, 15 feet, and he stuck the stick in the wall, in the hole in the wall. He put two hands on it. He did a flip, took it, and went all the way up the wall with that stick doing those phenomenal moves. It's like something out of a Bruce Lee movie. it's like if you can't even make that up. And he just did it off the cuff like it was no big deal. And I went, is this guy like Spider-Man? Is that nobody? I mean, that's not even normal. You know, that's not even normal to be that talented.
It's because he's Pot Monkey. Jackie Chan is Pot Monkey. I swear to God, I'm telling people that. He has to be Pot Monkey.
Yeah, no, you got that right. It was so good. It was so dynamic that I honestly couldn't believe what I was watching, what I was seeing. I just thought, you know, so when I came home, Benny Akitas and I became good friends, and we talked about him. We said, do you know why we're going to be famous with this? What Benny thought. You know why we're going to be famous with that? And I said, why? He goes, because we're going to be in Jackie Chan's last movie, because he'll definitely kill himself in this movie or another movie, because there's no way to do scenes like he does and survive, because his stunts, he does terrifying stunts that no union in the United States would allow him to do. I mean, no unions wouldn't allow it. You know, but he does, he's working all over the world, and he doesn't have to abide by unions. So he can just do what he wants to do. I mean, you couldn't do anything he's doing and get away with it here in the United States. It's just incredible. So now I had a lot of respect for this guy. My goodness, was he talented. Yong Bao and Sammo Hung, those three guys, they were as talented as I've ever seen. But in the perspective of movie making and actors, you know, Jackie thought he was a big-time fighter, too, and that's not the case. And there was a little one time there was some friction on the set between him and Jackie Chan and Benny Akitas over some inserts, because, you know, it's just something that happened. And I made a comment to Jackie, and they've written a lot of stories about this and a lot of books I've read myself, where I just told him, I said, you're an actor, you know, you're an actor first, and you're doing a film about being a fighter. I said, Benny Akitas is a fighter, and he's just acting. I said, you don't want to fight a fighter. Benny Akitas is the number one full contact fighter in the world. He's probably the best fighter I've ever seen in my life. And I said, you would have no business challenging him or fighting him, because he wanted to challenge him. I said, don't do that. He'll hurt you. And Benny was right there on the set listening to it. And Benny was the number one fighter in the world at the time. Get this, I was the number five fighter in full contact at time in his weight division. And I was the number one fighter in the world for points, tournament fighting, for all weight divisions. But for full contact, I was doing that too. One day I was going to have to fight Benny if I kept that up. And Benny and I would travel. Benny and I would train. We had off time, you know, in Barcelona. And I'm so fortunate I never had to fight Benny, because Benny doesn't feel pain. He's got Cro-Magnon features. He's a throwback to some dinosaur, some Cro-Magnon. I'm not even making that up. He's got these eyelids that come out, and I tell him, I go, you know, that's called Neanderthal look. I said, you know, they've been dead for 10,000 years, but you still have those characteristics. And he goes, what does that mean? I went, do you feel pain? He goes, no. I went, well, that's what I'm talking about. Perhaps the Neanderthals didn't feel pain, but these people, we're called humanoids, we feel pain. And when you hit me like you hit me, I feel it. And we would laugh about it, but I go, Benny, you literally don't feel pain. And he'd go, no, I don't. He says, I don't know what it is. I hit him as hard as I've ever hit while training. I hit him with a back leg kick that it should have killed him and put him in a coma, or at least put him in a coma for a week. I hit him as hard as I can hit a human being, and he just looked at me and says, are you ready now? And I went, oh, my goodness. My leg is throbbing, and I kicked him as hard as I could kick. And I've been all over the world fighting. That's what I was doing. And he could just – it didn't even faze him. So when Benny Akitas, when he's standing next to Jackie and Jackie's going, oh, yes, I'll challenge him to a fight because he's pissed off, I went, oh, no, no, you don't want to fight this guy. You're an actor. When you put those gloves on, there's nobody's going to jump in the ring and go, cut, cut. So, but what a wonderful experience. I mean, you know, to do that film and then to be in Revenge of the Ninja, one of the most successful martial arts films of all time, that was wonderful. To work with Keith Strandberg, I did Blood Moon with him. I did No Retreat, No Surrender 3 with Lauren Avedon. Lauren Avedon was a phenomenal athlete. I did Super Fights with Keith Strandberg. So Keith and I developed such a wonderful relationship and taught these camps together, and we would tour, you know, we would get on motorcycles together. And Keith has since moved out to and lives in Switzerland now, married a beautiful lady out there, and has three kids living in Switzerland. And we talk once a week, and we're still going to try to produce a film and work together. I have friends like, I don't know if you know John Crane and Art Camacho.
Yeah, Johnny Crane.
John's one of my best friends in life, and I trained John Crane when he was a brown belt. He used to fly out and stay at my house, and he's a brown belt, and I'd bring him into karate school, and we'd train. And then when I moved out to L.A., him and I moved in together. I took acting classes when I moved out to L.A. I studied with Jeff Goldblum, the actor, and he was my acting coach. And at night, I would go with John Crane when he was a comedian, and him and I would go to the all the comedy shows, and I'd get this. I would watch him perform comedy, and I was the guy in the audience. Anytime he was performing his comedy, and if he had a dull moment or he was not doing well, I'm the guy in the audience that would go, "Hey, you stink like a plant," because John had the best comebacks of all time. And John would go, "Hey, where are you from?" And I'd say something, they'd go, "Oh, yeah." And then John would get into the audience and go crazy. So we did that all over the place.
He's crazy. He's awesome. And he gave me this thing with saying about follow your bliss, right? And Johnny Crane was one of the first stunt guys on my show. And it was like, you know, just take it from there. Like, I've been getting more people like yourself on my show, and I feel very blessed. But Johnny was one of the first ones on my show. And I was like, there he's talking about, you know, he fought like Jet Li and he interviewed Jackie Chan. And I'm like, man, it was a shock to my system because, you know, and for me, growing up, you know, seeing you guys, I'm thinking, oh, you're all big and you've done great work and stuff. But the funny thing is, it seems like people that have success, like yourself, where I'm trying to make my own success, you guys have treated me with so much respect. And I'm just like, I'm so blown away because you have this idea that thing when people get a certain, you know, a certain way in life, you think maybe they're not going to, you know, treat me a certain way because I'm considered,
right,
maybe I'm a nobody. But here you guys are and done all these things I've always dreamed of doing, and you're just talking to me like a normal person. And now it's like I look at you guys where you're not just these superstars, you're just like normal human beings. Like, I seem like I've known you guys my whole life because this is stuff that I've watched my whole life as a little kid. You know, I kept it in a closet that I liked ninjas. Like, I would have it, like, hidden. But here I am talking about it because, you know, I'm a girl, you know, and growing up, it wasn't kind of normal. Like, it was more like Barbies and dolls and stuff like that. And I wanted to be ninja, but that's not normal. It wasn't normal for a girl to do that or do martial arts or like Jackie Chan. And I kept hearing that. It's not normal. And actually, it's like to learn about martial arts and more, and I just know some basic stuff, it's more about respect. It seems like in that type of world with the acting, because you hear about people getting messed up so bad, like actors and stuff. I won't bring up names, and you're like, wow. But then you hear about the martial arts world, like yourself and many other people, and it seems like they have more, like, better heads on their shoulders. And I'm
great
point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and what a compliment that you said that, because that – means more to me than anything else, because that's who we are. We enjoy your passion. When we come across somebody that's passionate, that's a fellow actor or stunt person, believe me, we don't take on airs. We take you under our wing. We love it. We see you like we were when we started out. John Crane, yeah, I mean, just think. Now think about all these guys, how great of friends we are. There's no animosity. There's no putting anybody down. There's nobody calling names. We literally love each other. We do anything in our power to help each other. You know, and that's how you grow, and that's how other people get referred to people. And there's so many other good guys out there. You've got to meet, I don't know if you know James Liu. And Art Camacho. These guys are the best in their film. I mean, best. I love them, and I, you know, anytime I can work with these guys, and I've worked with almost everybody, And, you know, to a lot of these guys before. And, we all talk all the time about, you know, doing some small part together and doing something together. And it's great because we have so much total respect for each other. But that's the key, that we want to be accessible. When people come up to us, we don't go, no, we don't want to talk to you. We go, no, we'd love your passion. Because what's going to make you successful and separate you from the rest is your passion. And what I tell people in any of these camps or anytime I talk, I always tell people, you've got to bring something to the table that's a little different or a little bit more. And I go, take me for an example. I said, I'm not good with all the stunts. I can do some, but I can't do what Steve Lambert can do or John Crane or these guys. I'm not even related to anybody like Jackie Chan. You know, so what I have to do is, my weakness is, they have to be somebody that follows me around to do my stunts I can't do. I said, imagine this. What if you're auditioning and you can do your own stunts? What if you can do your own flips? What if you can do your own singing or dancing? What if you can do your own nunchucks or your weapons, swordplay? I said, I can't do any of that. I said, everything you bring to the table that you can do, it enhances the possibility of you to break into films. It's when you're somebody like me that goes, can you do that? And I have to go, no. How about your right side? I'm better on my right side, not my left side. You can't do that in films. You can't have a good side and a bad side. You know, I'm lucky who I was for Jackie Chan, for me to be smart enough for Sammo Hung to go, Keith, change sides. And I went, oh, you don't want my left side. My left side's better good than my right side. But, you know, if you're anybody else, they just fire you. Go home. We'll find somebody with two good sides. So what you have to be, when you have to be prepared. You have to have a good attitude. You have to know the semantics of the film world, like your mark and where the light is, when, you know, cheat this way. Just know those things, how to project. And then just want to be so different and to be yourself. And if you can, because everybody is so different, you know, and then people are amazed because we pick people out because they're different. And they go, well, this guy looks like Bruce Lee. I go, we don't want Bruce Lee. We don't want Jackie Chan. There already is a Jackie Chan. We want somebody totally different. You know, so that's, for me, giving you advice, you know, you have a good look, you have great passion, attitude, you work on your projection, your face. Guess what? Right now, and again, what I've said before, remember, I opened up this and I've said I was very fortunate to be at the right time. The right time was, I was in the era of karate movies. They don't make karate movies anymore. They really make movies that have karate in them, but they're not karate movies per se. You know, there's 2 years they did karate movies. They sold them as karate movies. We went to the film festivals as karate movies. Now, every movie has karate in it. You know, you name any movie that's an action film, there's going to be somebody doing some kind of kicks or punches or karate. So they don't call them karate movies anymore, unless it's a Jet Li movie or not even Jackie Chan doesn't do karate movies. He does movies that has karate in them. You know, so everything that you can do to bring more to the table. But my point is going to be that there's so many more men compared to women. When I produced a film called Blood Moon with Keith Strandberg, Keith and I auditioned people, and we needed a film star, a female star, and we couldn't find one. We sent off for females all over the nation. We got videotape after videotape in, and the videotapes were awful. What happened was, I would talk to a casting director, and they go, oh, yes, my star is phenomenal. I go, can you send me like a headshot resume? Can you send me some video on her? And because I want to see the video. I just don't want to take them on, you know, them saying that they're good. And we would literally sometimes, we would watch the films they bring to send us, and they're the worst things you've ever seen in your life. But, of course, their manager would say, oh, no, they've got 10 years of martial arts and they're the best you've ever seen. And then you would see them in a white belt, and they couldn't do anything. We'd go, oh. So we finally hired a girl. And for Blood Moon, I liked her. She was a sweet girl, but she was so limited that we doubled her almost in every scene. Now, get this. She's a female. We had a Chinese actor doubling her, putting a wig on, having to double her in every scene because she couldn't do a lot of the martial arts. So for you to be talented, you know, have looks and passion, good attitude, you know, you can't find these kind of women. You have a much greater percentage to break in than most men do, which is great. I think it's about time.
Yeah, It's taken a while. Like, I know I had to overcome things where when I first started getting into acting, and I was more, I know I have some basic martial arts skills, and I can do things. I can shoot a bow, I can shoot a gun, you know, pick up a bow staff and do, you know, basic things, have knowledge how to hold it and a sword and stuff.
Right.
And when I first got into it, and I was in my 30s, and I was training in a dojo in Capoeira, and I was cut really good. When I went, okay, now I'm 5'8", you know, I'm kind of tall. And
right.
When I went to audition, they automatically wanted to try to cast me, I don't know, maybe because of Italian with the big hair, they wanted me to do, like, the slut in the whole rose, like, automatically looking at me
right.
And going, that's not what I'm coming here for. I don't want to take my clothes off. And that's all they kept wanting to try to cast me for. And people are like, oh, Shelly, you know, you're in 30s. You should take that as a compliment. And I go, why? And they're like, well, you're not some big star. You should just take anything and just go with it. Go, but that's not what I want to do. And,
right.
And I was like, I swear, even like, I went to audition. I swear to God I was going to do this. I was going to go in disguise as a man. I was going to put a sock in my pants, tuck my hair up underneath my hat. And I wanted to go because they, like, some of the films they started filming in Boston, they were just looking for a basic little kick, a little punch from a guy. And I'm tall.
Right.
And I really wanted to do that. I really was going to go incognito as a man, right? And that's what I really wanted to do. But it's getting out there and getting to know people and starting to work on sets. And, like, you know, they said, you know, Shelley's kind of, you know, how I got in this one set of Central Realism, it was word of mouth of people that had worked in the setting. You know, Shelley's really, you know, dedicated when she's on set. She'll help in, like, I don't think it's beneath me to put my to help out in other things, to hold a boom mic, to do other things on set.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
I'm around and just say, you want me to help go get food or something, put some shine makeup on an actor, like, do these other things and pitch in, because I'm not a prima donna. And I'm like, oh, you want me to go throw me over a bar and stuff like that? And, you know, just being able to do multiple things. And I was like, this one set, I think you'd appreciate this. And I've had a dream always play a ninja. I finally got to take something off my bucket list. For my birthday, I just turned 43, and I says, you know, I want to do something and, you know, dedicate something to Bruce Lee and Brandon Lee, because it's the anniversary of their passing,
right.
Both of them, this year. And it says, oh, I'm turning 43, and I want to do something. So I got casted as a ninja, and I wanted, I bought a Kato costume, right, the mask and the hat and everything, and I'm like, I'm so excited, and I'm all with the ninja, and I was like, well, I'm not head boss ninja, and I'm the only girl ninja. And then it's like, the head boss ninja didn't show up, and I was sitting there waiting, because it was like, there's pirates and vampires and stuff, and four superheroes, and I'm playing the bad guy, and people are like, Shelly, why are you playing the bad guys, because you're such a sweet girl and stuff, and I'm like, well, I'm kind of crazy, I like doing that. So I'm sitting there, and so the lead ninja didn't show up, and it had the two kids were parkour guys, and they were paired up together, and the two martial artists has more experience. And I says, okay, I says, well, I'm going to fight a girl a little bit. And I says, I'm really going to get cut. I says, you know what, I'm just going to kick back. It's nice. I get fed food. I'm sitting on this, and I'm just practicing. And they're going, okay, Shelly, come on. Okay, boss, come on. They're to call me boss. And I'm going, okay, didn't dawn on me. They have me face the four superheroes, and I'm going, and I'm holding the bow staff, and they're like, okay, you're going to do this, and I'm going, what? Because the other ninjas were practicing, and it's like, I was like, going, oh, crap, and I'm trying to hold the steady, and they had people, I'm going, I'm going to fight all four, and I wasn't ready for this, because this is not something I've expected, and they're like, you're going to do this, and so they knew me, it's like, one of my other film brothers, Brother Bill, he's like, you know, Shelly's very dedicated, what she'll do, and says she'll fall over the place, you know, and so I listened to them, and they cut it, because I was like fighting, they did taking down 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it's like, you know, I was like, that was kind of cool, that I was like, I was head boss ninja, and I thought I was going to get cut. And I was like, this is awesome. This is cool. And I was like, yes. I was head boss ninja. Now I get to talk to all my ninja pals, like ninja, Stephen Lambert. He's my ninja pal. And I'm like, I was like, Stephen Lambert for a day. And I'm like, yeah. I was like, ninja. And not just a ninja, but a head boss ninja. And I, like, loved it. And then I found out that they needed zombies, and I was like, I'm going to play a zombie, and I'm going to get all into it. And I didn't want to be a little prim and proper zombie. I got, like, a $5, you know, Goodwill dress, a wedding dress. I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to turn something, you know, I'm going to get all nasty. So I'm in Maine. We're filming it. And I was like, there's no mud of all times. We're somewhere like in Stephen King land. And we're filming this thing. It says, I'm going to get really, really nasty. So I take soda, I pour it all over the ground. I'm taking this, you know, dress, pouring it all over the place, all over it, making it all muddy and all stuff. And I put on this blonde wig, and I'm putting dirt, I'm putting makeup on, I'm putting dirt all over myself. So then we get a bucket of blood, which is part of the zombie thing, and people just dip in their little napkins and dipping it on their thing. I said, no, you got to do it like this. I take two cups and I'm putting it in. Everybody's like, Sam, they go, what? I go, you got to do it like this. I take the two cups and I pour it on me, and they're like, oh, my gosh. So I'm soaking, drenched with blood, and I go, what's this? So I'm gargling the blood, and I spit it out, and they're like, oh, my God. And I was like, just all nasty. And I was like, getting on to that. But they're loving that. It's like, I think the director was loving this. I don't want to be like this clean thing. I mean, George Romero, you get into the characters. You live in
right,
the moment.
Right.
And it was just awesome, and they give you all. And then if you look at my Facebook page, that new zombie picture, that was me. That's me in the film. And the photographer, she took this, and I was like, she had her model that was on there, and I was like, I was going towards her, and she was taking pictures. Like, I got to find this woman who took the pictures and stuff. So she sent me one, and she's, I'm putting this on my Facebook page. It's Halloween. And I was like, man, this is awesome. I was like, I should go on online and put on one of those dating cycle. Hey, baby, look at me. It's like, you know, it's this zombie thing, you know. It's just awesome. You give your all.
It's a shame you're
no
not
matter
here
what
in
type
Atlanta.
Of...
You know what,
in Atlanta?
What? We shoot. You know what they shoot here in Atlanta? The Walking Dead.
Yeah, that's
you know,
what
the zombie movie?
I got. Yeah, I got a little mad at it because it's like, you know, they're killing off people. I don't want to have killed off. I'm like, oh, I can't. I'm having a meltdown. I just can't, like, you know, it's like, because I get so involved in it. And it's like, the funny thing, you know how you brought that up? I don't know if you've heard of a stunt guy, Tommy Mack survey.
No.
He was actually in the first episode. And he actually flipped the car over. It was the first one when Rick and the other guy was coming. He flipped the car over, and he was, like, in the middle of the zombies where Rick horse, he was on the horse, he pulled the horse down, and Tommy's, you know, thing is he teaches and trains horses. So the zombies
wow.
were in the horses, but he pulls the horse down. It's trained the horse to, like, kind of, like, lay down. So that's what him and his family does. He's a stunt guy, too, and he works, like, with Steve McQueen and all these different people, and he's been in the business for a while, and he was on my show, and it's like, it's just amazing that I'm connecting with all you guys because, like, me, it's just like family.
It was good.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
wonderful. It's
awesome.
And you know, and if we can inspire you, if we can inspire anybody that's listening, you know, that's what it's for, and that's what it's about. You know, we'd love to see anybody that has the passion, that wants to break into films, and I don't care if it's from the acting or the stunt side of it. It's just, it's wonderful. And the martial arts is another, I mean, aspect, the zombies or the vampires, all that's just cool. And it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just being passionate about what you want. And the attitude is everything, because when you on the set and you're having to work all these long hours, you don't want to work with people that have a bad attitude. It's simple as that. And if somebody is on a low budget indie film and they're willing to do other things, and not be a prima donna. And as a producer, I hate it when somebody says, I'm not going to help. I'm not going to do that. It's not my job. You just don't want them around. You know, you remember it. You go, those aren't the people you want. Because everybody has to help out. Now, you have your, of course, your job responsibilities. But sometimes in these indie films, you got to do more. You just have to help out in order to keep the cost down.
Yeah, and that's what I want to do. I want to, you know, because I totally understand, you know, the acting and the stunts, and the next day you might be like a little achy. I figure maybe I can learn about editing and other things on set, because I'll always be a valuable asset if I learn about
right.
other things when they can call me for something else. So I'm trying to learn, even like they have all these programs and I'm making some pictures and adding things, like learning little things here and there. So, you know, if I'm not feeling like I can't move the next day because I got thrown to the ground and I'm like, oh, I'm kind of crippled right now and I can't move, you know, the next day I can do something else. So I'm all bandaged up. I could be sitting doing something on the computer, maybe do voiceovers because I like doing cartoons. Like I do like, I don't know if you know, like, do you know Lilo and Stitch?
Yeah.
Like, it's, I can do, like, cartoons, like, well, oh, Hema, and then Stumbler, the small and broken, but the sugar. Then Stumbler, the hound. Wah, wah. So, like, doing things like that. And, you know, like, like, doing things like that and just be able to, you know, learn from you guys, but I know it's like I get on set and it's like the first thing I want to go is to the stunt guys. And they say, Shelly, don't bother the stunt people. You got to be there. And it's like, because I know it's the wrong time, but just watching people, if I was working on set with you, I'd be like Homer Simpson from The Simpsons, like for a donut. Like you're sitting there drooling with this tongue off, going, ah, oh, donut. I'd be like looking at you guys and going, ah, oh, stunt work. Ah. Oh. And just like looking to see what you do, because then I'm seeing it firsthand. And I'm trying to remember what you guys do. You know, the safety factor. I know handling weapons. Weapons are not toys. And everything like that, and anything, if you're riding horses, stunt driving in cars, doing clips or anything, try to watch you guys exactly how it is, because I'm starting to do little things myself, and I'm like, okay, what did these guys do? And I try to bring into things myself. So you guys inspire me a lot.
You get this, too. You know, sometimes people think it has to be stunts or has to be from that fighting perspective. Sometimes you can just be there being helpful. You know, when the camera's setting up, the cinematographer has to frame the scene, and he has to get everything in. And so what they'll do sometimes, they'll go, can I get somebody to stand in here where the actor's going to be? Like a double. And so you stand there, and you're in the same spot the actor's going to be, and you become that person. And then when everything's set, ready, they got to, you know, they make sure that it's the right distance and everything's ready, then they bring in the actor. Well, guess what? You're important. Or sometimes you might be able to double that person if they're doing something. I mean, so there's so many things you can do to be useful on the set. And then sometimes what they do is they'll throw you a bone. And by a bone, I mean they'll throw you a line of dialogue. They'll help you get your SAG card because they like you. And they'll go, and you know, sometimes they'll do that and they'll go, you know, this person's been so helpful. Let's let her get her SAG card. You know, if that's something that you want, and a lot of people want it. And so what you do is they'll throw a line to somebody, and that guy goes, "Man, that's great." And now they qualify for SAG, they get their SAG card, and they can also, you know, now it opens up that world for them as well. So we always preach, of course, be ready and you know your craft, but also it's your attitude. It's just being there, because people love being around somebody with a positive attitude.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's what I was on set, because when I go to set, right, the one thing for a rule for myself is I don't go there to date, because it's like I hear these stories and I mind my business. And the two things I bring on set, if I'm allowed to, the first thing is my Jackie Chan book, his autobiography. One book fell apart because I love the book so much. So my big sister, she got me one of the smaller book, and it fell apart too, because I would bring it and just keep reading it, you know, and it's like stuff I would get into my own little world. And then I'd pull out my nunchucks and just try to practice with it. And people come over and they're going, you really got nunchucks? And the next thing you know, people are using it, trying to use it on set. It's kind of funny because that's how I make friends. I was like, yeah, I got a pair of nunchucks in my bag. And people, when they don't know me, they think I'm kidding around, and they pull them out and they're like, you weren't kidding. And they're like, I tried. And then they have nunchucks and they're like, I was like, wow, these are cool. So it's fun to get to know people on set. And, you know, sometimes you get where, you know, you try to be respectful inside to have a work atmosphere. Sometimes you might not get along with people, but as long as you're professional, you're always welcome back and, you know, any surroundings.
Right.
So I feel blessed about that. It's getting word of mouth, where I've been trying to do things for 10 years, and I'm not some big superstar, but I think it's my energy and getting to connect and like, yeah, word of mouth, have Shelly come on. We'll throw you here. I'd like to do 50 million films and do cameos here and there, because like, Shelly's in that. You know, like the old Bugs Bunny cartoon, Bugs Bunny first base, Bugs Bunny second base, Bugs Bunny. You know, it's like, Shelly's in Chuck's hair. That would be awesome, you know, because they'd be like, yeah, she's catching up to Jackie Chan.
But see, you have it. So, you know, you don't do well. Well, listen, it is getting late. I've got a big day tomorrow. So I've really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for having me on the show. And is it okay to sign off,
No. Like I said, it's totally up to anybody. That's what my show is just about. That it's like whoever's my guest, they're welcome, and it's like whatever time you give me, I'm very thank you so much. And you know, I hope you can be a guest on my show, and you know, feel free to contact me on Facebook. And thank you so much, Keith, for being on my show tonight. I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart.
Well, I loved every minute. You're so easy to talk to. And you said when we first met You said you'll forget about the interview. You'll think we're just having a conversation. And guess what? That's what we did. We just talked like friends, like we've known each other for a long time, which I love.
It's the energy. Send in the love.
That's it. Well, listen, I hope the people listening enjoyed the show, and it was really a pleasure meeting you and being on your show. And everybody, please take care, and I hope to meet all of you sometime.
Oh, well, thank you, Keith, and you have a good evening.
All right. Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I always have the great guests. Don't I have the great guests? And believe it or not, my co-host, Jackie Chan Kitty, my little furball, she's all here. She was actually very, very nice. And, oh, my gosh, this is so awesome. You heard it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm living my childhood live on the air with you and all, sharing it. And all the ninjas that I got to watch growing up, I feel like a little kid right now. I'm just so excited. Man, where does the time go? I just don't know where the time goes. I'm sitting here going, man, it's 10:45. What else can I talk about? If anybody feels like calling in, you can call the number 347-989-1473, 347-989-1473, and everybody that's in the chat room, Heidi, hello. But, I just feel very blessed, feel very lucky, and, you know, I just celebrated a birthday Monday. It was really great, and Brother Z, we had a nice big orange cake for me. You know, it's Halloween this month, and I just feel very, very blessed because being able to work on that film, Essential Realism, I swear, 10 years ago, I never thought I'd be doing any of this at all. And I got to play a ninja. Not only that, but in a Kato costume. I mean, for you guys that don't know Kato, there's a couple Kato characters, but if you know Bruce Lee, I mean, Donnie Yen donned this Kato costume too, but the person that's known for it the most is actually Bruce Lee. And I so wanted to dedicate it something this year because it is the anniversary passing of Bruce Lee and Brandon Lee, and I was like, I want to do something desperately to dedicate to Bruce Lee. So I got to be Head Boss Ninja in the Kato costume, and it's really kind of cool because I like doing the characters. You really don't know it's me because then you end up going to a premiere and people will be like, Shelly Nunchucks, that was you on screen? And it's this awesome feeling. I'm like, yep, that was me. Because you dressed up, and that's what I really think is acting, where you're not looking the same, you know, in these roles, but just turning yourself into a character where people go, whoa. And like in the zombie thing, I went all out. And let me tell you, I got to tell you guys this thing. I go to the directors. I think I mentioned this on the other show. And on his street, it looks like a log cabin. And I'm about up here in Maine, and you know who's known to live here. I mean, other people, but Stephen King. He's from Bangor, right? So I'm sitting there, you know, Boston girls lived in Maine for 4 years, and I'm kidding around. I'm like, you know, this looks like a Stephen King type of street. Alan, you know, the guy behind Essential Realism, and I think Bill Freitag McLean, I think he had something to do with writing the plot. I could be wrong, but I'm just throwing it out there, so I don't forget about Brother Bill. Al turns around and says, Stephen King grew up down on the street. My jaw just dropped. I'm like, what? He goes, yes. When Stephen King was a child, Stephen King grew up on the street. And I'm going, hubbada, hubbada, hubbada. And then he turns around and says, yeah, there's a pet cemetery up the street. And that's where Stephen King got his idea for his book, The Pet Cemetery. And then people are like, you want to go see him? I'm like, oh, hell no. And I'm thinking, I'm up in the woods, okay, and people saying, let's go to the pet cemetery. Listen, I'm a white girl. I'm not going to be a stupid white girl. Yeah, that's how horror movies start. Mm-hmm. And then just thinking about, there I was Friday night, you know, doing the zombie scene, and I was trying to take off, you know, very discreetly because my underwear was all bloodied and everything like that. I was trying to take off my bra. I was just stripping. I says, you know what, I'm going to put on sweatpants and stuff. And I had to pee. There was no bathrooms, and I had to pee so bad. So I'm sitting there. I says, I'm going to have to go behind the barn. And one thing I know is when you go on, you know, any location, always bring a roll of toilet paper. I had to pee like a racehorse. Let me tell you, I had to go behind the barn, and I'm sitting here. I'm by myself, I'm going, and I had a pee, like I said, like a racehorse. I'm going, oh, my God. I'm sitting in the middle of the woods. I says, this is how horror movies start. I'm going, please, please, please. I just want to hurry up and pee, get back where everybody else is. So I felt like, man, this is going to be the start of a horror movie. And I was a zombie as it was, and I was a mess. And I'm telling you, I am a walking promotional, like, board for films, because I'm so used to working with DirecTV, which we are still working on Falcon, and I know Saturday morning, we have to film at 6 a.m. 6 a.m., that means I have to get up at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, Saturday morning, because getting dressed up, and I'm like, oh, yes, I think a new wardrobe finally after a year of wearing the same costume for the training scene for Falcon. But just to think, it's like, just to do all this stuff, man, I think I'm so overtired. I'm going to stop sounding like Beavis from Beavis and Butthead. I swear to God, I'm going to start talking about, like, pee-pee from my bunghole or something like that. I'm so, like, like overtired because, you know, I work, like, Monday to Thursday, try to cram in, like, 40 hours so I can try to do everything else. And, you know, looking more and more for my radio show, I'm praying for syndication because it's like, you know what would be the ultimate dream is to have the radio show syndicated, you know, and then that'll be like my full-time job. I mean, it's a lot of work. I got to tell you, to run this radio show, you know, by myself, I'm hoping to someday, you know, I'll be able to have an assistant to help me and such. But just to do everything and try to stay in contact, you know, to get the guests to come on the show. And mind you, I'm in Eastern time. I mean, Keith was actually, you know, he's Eastern time, I think, in Atlanta. But some of the guests are out in California. So I got to take into factor the hour differences. So, you know, I'm not calling someone really early or whatever because people are from different time zones, and I got to keep that into my head because I get so excited, and I just got to be very respectful, you know, getting people on my show. I'm just going to remember the time zones that they're in. That's what I got to remember. And I'm like, well, what time is it right now? And okay, I still got about like 5-7 minutes left before I play the song of the night, before I end the show. But, you know, anybody out there, I'm going to tell you, I've been through so many things, you know, moving up to Maine. I mean, my life has changed for the good. Believe me, if anybody has a dream out there, you know, whatever it is, you have to hang on because you are going to regret it. If you give up on your dreams, you're going to really, really regret it. Here I am, you know, I mean, I pay my own bills, a roof over my head, you know, and, you know, doing my dreams and working in films, it's a lot of work. I know people, they say about, you know, the actors and stuff, but it's a lot of work. And I see people that have been working in the business longer than me, 12 hours, 14 hours a day. And you sit there and you're just like, man, it's monotonous, you know. And if you just want things handed to you, don't get into acting because you got to keep doing the same thing over and over again. The one thing I know that you should never do if you ever get into acting, never look at the camera. When you're on set as an extra, never look at that, because I've been seeing films and I catch extras looking at the camera. I've seen that. I'm like, man, I'm so spoiled and stuff, like working on sets, because there's things that I know, and I just, like, I don't know if I ruined the experience of being in a movie theater for myself anymore, because I don't watch movies the same as I used to. And anybody that's, I think, that's acting, anybody that's, like, tuning in, you know what I'm talking about, because you're going to be sitting there checking the lighting, if I can pronounce the word, continuity of the film. You're going to check to see even the styles of the haircuts of the men or something like that, or, you know, if a woman's wearing a pocketbook strap over her right shoulder and the next scene is like the left shoulder. You'll tend to pick up these things, or people, like the extras that they use over again and again walking in the background. Wait, you'll be like, didn't they just walk by in that scene? And you'll notice things. You'll start picking things up, and it's like, man, you'll be like, man, you just cannot watch films the same ever again. Once you start working in films, you will never watch it the same again. Or it's just like these other things, too. It's like when they're open, when an actor's going to go outside, are they pushing the door open or are they pulling the door open? It's like these little tiny things. Or if somebody's eating, like I swear to God, it's like an apple or something. Like, you know, if they're cutting to a scene, how many bites did they take out of the apple, you know, in each scene, because they have to cut. And if they use the same apple, it's going to keep getting smaller and smaller in the scene. And you just pick these things up. But, you know, I tend to ramble. I do, because I'm so overtired. I think I've been up since, like, 4 o'clock this morning, 5 o'clock this morning, you know, doing things, you know, working hard, working my butt off. And the greatest feeling in the world is being able to do the things that I do. It's a whole other world. I mean, last weekend, I was all over Maine. I don't even know where the heck I was. Durham, Monuments in Maine. Man, it was like Stephen King land. I mean, I've been up to Bangor, and I actually found Stephen King's house, and I took a picture in front of it. Believe it or not, it's on a regular street. It, you know, you just, like, you don't even, like, you know, Stephen King, he's actually just a normal guy, but he writes all these crazy stories and stuff. He actually lives in a normal house, but the gates in front of it, they have, like, bats or something on the top of it. It was like, I'm in front of Stephen King's house, and it's like people were driving by Stephen King's house, and you know how they say about drive-by shootings? Well, they were doing drive-by picture take, and they're like, come on, let's go, and they're taking pictures, and then they take off, and I'm like, what the heck, drive-by picture-taking? Like, you know, like some sort of crazy thing. And I'm like, that's just so kind of crazy. But it's just like, I just feel very, very blessed once again to be able to, you know, get these guests on my show. And I'll be getting more and more people. And I do apologize because with my email address, I couldn't get into it. Somebody's been trying to, like, keep resetting my password to my Yahoo account that I've had for, like, 12 years. And I need, you know, an email address. And, like, knowing that, making these contacts for myself, everybody has a LinkedIn account. I closed that sucker out because all this hard work that I've been doing to making contacts, I don't think it's really right that I'd be working this hard and people are going to try to contact with me to get my contacts. And I'm like, you know what? All these guests and stuff come to my shows, they trust me, and I'm sorry. I just can't have a LinkedIn account. I just don't want people to be bothered, you know, through me to try to get through to other people. So I'm not having a LinkedIn account. I know it's probably a big thing, but I'm not going to have that. And my email address for my business contacts and stuff, I'm not going to put it publicly because everybody knows my Yahoo, my Boston Yahoo address, email address. I'm going to have to change that and get a new one. So my business contacts, I haven't been able to send things out, you know, send invites and stuff to my show. So that's been very irritating, and that's like a very big deal to have an email address. So I haven't been able to send things out and try to send my dishwasher script out to a couple of people. It's been such chaotic for these past couple of weeks because I was doing more and more filming. So I'm going to have to think of a good email address that I can remember that I'm just not going to give out to the public. I'm sorry to hate to have to do this, but for professional business reasons, I'm going to have to do it that way. But, you know, it's the awesome week, the awesome month, the Halloween month, you know, all the scary stuff, the horror movies. There's got to be some great horror movies coming out. Speaking of great films, I actually just watched The Man of Tai Chi with Keanu Reeves. And the funny thing is, I was, like, looking at a part, and I even seen this when Donnie Yen has a film that's coming out called Iceman, not the same as J.G. Onomi's Iceman. It's two different things. I think Donnie Yen actually gets frozen, and he's actually Iceman, comes to present day or something. I don't know, but that's what it looked like from the trailer. And Donnie Yen does this move, and it's guarding the spirit. It's a Tai Chi move. And I've actually taken a picture where I'm doing guarding the spirit. And I'm going, I recognize that movement. I stuck in my head, guarding the spirit, the movement. I'm going, hey, I did that. And now Donnie Yen just did that. And then I was like, man. I'm not percentage like Donnie Yen or anything like that. But, you know, it's just like, I recognize guarding the spirit. I was like, oh, my gosh, I knew that. And I was like, I took a screenshot of Donnie Yen doing the guarding the spirit. And I was like, I know what that is. It's like, I love it when I remember a movement and what it's called. And, man, if I get syndicated, I swear to God, I'm going to have to train some more. Like, I haven't trained for a while. I'm going to have to train some more and direct a Z. Yeah, he's going to be kicking our butts because we're going to have a big battle scene at Valkyrie. And you got to go, if anybody, you know, wants to help, you know, with funds and donations for our film called Valkyrie, believe me, if you want to help show women in a positive light, I'm telling you, working with direct a Z is, oh, my gosh. I just don't think, you know, it's very a strict set, and I think it's just preparing me. I think Director Z is really preparing me. If I can't work with Director Z, you know, my big brother Z, I don't think I'd be able to work anywhere in this world. He's just, he really knows his stuff, and, you know, even the time when he wanted me to fight him in Korea, I almost pooped my pants, because this guy's a master of martial arts. And here I am, just basic, you know, things that I learned. And he's like, you're going to fight me? And I'm like, huh? Pooping my pants on set, ladies and gentlemen. The first time he threw me, so I had seen it, I bounced off the ground at Fort Williams in Maine. Oh, my God, Mia. I went, oh. It was just like, just an amazing thing. But the next day, I didn't feel that much amazing. I was like walking around like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. But, you know, yeah. I just like to talk about these things more and more, and it looks like it is the end of the show. Where does the time go, ladies and gentlemen? Where does the time? But anyway, if you have a dream, remember, you are as good as anybody else. As Johnny Crane once told me, follow your bliss. Follow it, baby, because if I'm doing it, you can too. Anyway, everyone, have a good night. Speak to you guys on Sunday.
Thank you.